Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips to the PC. It is Saturday, the 21st of May, Anno Domini 2011, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And for the next two of your remaining 6 hours, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff to use, nothing to lose, satire, humor, things that
go bump in the
rhyme
dark
with ooze. Well, I hope not. Steve's got a bit of a cold, so I'm really hoping not.
He's all dumped up.
All right, let's start with one of the big news items of the week. The next time a website says to download a new software to view a movie or fix a problem, think twice. There's a pretty good chance that the program is malicious. In fact, about one out of every 14 programs downloaded by Windows users, turns out to be malicious, Microsoft said Tuesday. And even though Microsoft has a feature in its Internet Explorer browser designed to steer users away from unknown and potentially untrustworthy software, about 5% of users ignore the warnings and download malicious Trojan programs anyway. 5 years ago, it was pretty easy for criminals to sneak their code onto computers. There were plenty of browser bugs, and many users weren't very good at patching. But since then, the cat-and-mouse game of Internet security has evolved. Browsers have become more secure, and software makers have quickly and automatically pushed out patches when there's a known problem. So increasingly, instead of hacking the browsers themselves, the bad guys try to hack the people using them. It's called social engineering, and it's a big problem these days. The attackers have figured out that it's not that hard to get users to download Trojans, said Alex Stamos, a founding partner with ISEC Partners, a security consultancy that's often called in to clean up the mess after companies have been hacked. Social engineering is how the Kubeface virus spread on Facebook. Users get a message from a friend telling them to go and view a video. When they click on the link, they're then told that they need to download some sort of video playing software in order to watch. That software is actually a malicious program. Social engineering hackers also try to infect victims by hacking into web pages and popping up fake antivirus warnings designed to look like messages from the operating system. Download these and you're infected. The criminals also use spam to send Trojans, and they will trick search engines into linking to malicious websites that look like they have interesting stories or videos about hot news, such as the royal wedding or the death of Osama bin Laden. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, one in 14 downloads is malicious. The choices are higher than I thought, I'll be more careful. About what I figured, I'm already careful. I'm not smart enough to care. And lucky for me, I've only ever downloaded 13 things. What just happened here?
What'd you do?
That's interesting. I have no idea.
You clicked on a unsupported link.
No.
Oops.
I clicked on the wrong set of links is what I did. I normally have all my stuff for sound bites in a... single folder, and I can right-click on the folder and select open all, only I opened the wrong one. So
I still have people that, new users that don't understand the difference between double-click and single-click. So they'll double-click a link on a website, and then their second click activates the ad that was underneath when their actual link opens up.
Right. So far we have 44 people, The majority say about what I figured, I'm already careful. When you're done with that, of course, I know you have more to say. So check out the yellow box underneath the poll. Click on Give Us Your Opinion. It will take you to another website where you can enter an opinion. The question being, how surprised are you that 1 in 14 downloads is malicious? So far, we've got 6 people who have answered that. And then come back and join us. We're here. Our question to you is, how surprised are you? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Of course, that's not the big news of the day, really. I did, unfortunately, I did the news this week on Thursday. I've been at work every night working on a paper, and it's due tomorrow. If I go to school and work on it all day today, and then I get taken up, I'm going to be really angry about it.
Are you one of those students that waits till the last second to write a paper?
No. I've been working on this paper for a while.
Two days?
No. Two weeks, more than that. But here's the deal. Yesterday, there was an explosion at one of the Apple... Oh, that's a nice fan. Thank you so much. I like that. I like that air.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
As long as it doesn't get too loud.
No, apparently
not.
It's
going to vibrate itself off.
It's not going to work. Just leave it on the floor. We'll eventually get some air. That's fine.
We got to find.
Apparently nobody dusts in the studio.
Find another outlet.
Not many of them in here.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, so too much electronic equipment already taken up all the.
I got to bring in an extension cord.
There you go. But we there was an explosion at one of the Apple manufacturing plants, and it seems to have been in the section that does iPads.
The i5 chip. One of the blogs I read said there's half a million people working in this building.
Right.
So it's huge.
Right. So we're not entirely certain where it happened, but it may be that we'll be looking at a shortage of something from Apple soon.
People killed, 16 people injured.
Yeah, that's very sad. But we may be finding a shortage of something. Don't be surprised if we do. That'll be next.
This plant, the Foxconn plant in Chengdu, has got criticism in the past for working conditions and safety issues. And a couple years,
you get a whole thing on the number of people who've committed suicide.
Yeah, a couple years ago, 13 suicides in a year. But then when you work around the other side, there's half a million people working in this building.
Right.
That's a very low percentage compared to the national average.
Assuming they weren't all from one area.
Yeah. And a lot of times the death benefits that are paid to family members are more than the salary that the person would have been making.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you wonder.
So it's had there's pictures and video from the Chinese news agencies. The company says that they're investigating the cause of the explosion, and that part of the assembly manufacturing plant is shut down until they figure out what happened.
Shh. Wow. Yeah, it's a huge royals of black smoke everywhere.
I mean, usually they're so cautious. I mean, yeah. You know, take every precaution. You know, make sure their quality.
When this is
because you know back in our day, when you said something made in Japan. Back in the 50s, you thought of cheap stuff.
Right.
Now, when you say made in Japan, it's like, oh, that's darn good stuff, especially when it comes to electronics
right.
and everything else. I mean, they kick everybody's butt because they do so much research and take so much care and pride in doing it.
Yeah, and there were similar issues with the I think Sony and several other companies after the Japanese earthquake and tsunami, that there were manufacturing facilities that were damaged by the mm-hmm. earthquake, and so there's shortages in across the electronics world that way, and now in this manufacturing plant in China, they make a lot more than just Apple products, but they're one of the principal electronic suppliers in China.
Don't forget, you can join us not only here. By calling 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. But you can also join us in the IRC chat room. You can do that right off the main page of Soundbites. Pick a username and hit the login button or use your own IRC client. You can do that. You can also text us your mm-hmm. messages at...
That is 585-209-9010. And I've got the screen up here, so if you're sitting somewhere, you know, don't want to, you know, it's too noisy and don't want to call, just text us your question and we'll gladly answer it.
And for those of you who don't know many of the acronyms that we use,
mm-hmm.
You can text the phrase define space and then that acronym. 2-585-348-8255 or 585-FIT-TALK, and the Soundbites robot will send you back what that acronym stands for.
Cool.
Assuming it's one that understands. Yeah. It understands thousands, but I get a little behind in keeping it up to date, particularly this last couple of weeks. So feel free to join us, and you're welcome, Chris, and we'll see what happens. And don't forget the whole idea behind this malicious download thing, 1 in 14 downloads. Folks, there's a couple of real simple ways to not get caught. Certainly you should dance the security tango regularly. Secondly, change the color of your webs of your desktop. You know, everybody's got that blue from the Windows default
standard,
blue.
Yep.
And a lot of these places that pop up Windows pop them up with a blue border on them, although it's not a real Windows border. Mm-hmm. So if you change the color to, for example, the silver that also comes with it, and you see that blue border, you know that blue border is fake. The third thing is, folks, if you are asked to download a program you never asked for, don't download it.
Sorry. And
okay, I've coughing the other eye.
I know, I was just, my mic was in
well,
the way.
If, like I've always said, if you even have to think about it for 1 second.
Don't do it.
If you even have to hesitate, don't do it. You know, if it's something, like you said, on your bank, pick up the phone and call them.
Yeah, the bank will never send you anything like that. PayPal will never send you anything like that. I keep getting a notice of debt to some place in the European Union. First, let them find me. That's first. Secondly, I've never taken out a loan in the European Union.
Probably Nicholas Francesco in Italy. Yeah.
There may well be one or more than one. Yeah. Actually, they would not be related to me, actually. Yeah.
Well, Bank of America wants me to get in contact with them because supposedly they've got a large sum of money that, you know, evidently they don't know what to do, and it's mine. And you know what? I've never had anything to do with Bank of America. Yeah. And they say, you know, on your account. Sorry, I don't have an account there. Never will.
I get notices every day that there's a problem with my eBay account. The problem is I don't have one. That's the problem from their point of view, perhaps, but not mine.
Could be.
And a lot of times these messages that pop up are badly worded or they'll have bad grammar, so they're obviously not a native English speaker.
Yes, definitely. Oh, you can tell those a mile away.
There's been a big upsurge in the last couple of weeks about the Mac malware fake antivirus message coming out that we've had several customers call us about it, and it's the same sort of things. If a program you never bought tells you there's a problem, it's probably lying.
Yep.
Right. And if you look really close at the screen, it doesn't look like your computer because it doesn't have your name on it. So it's a pretty good imitation, and it is scaring a lot of people. And there's sort of a controversy going in the tech community and some of the bulletin boards I post on. It's a 2-minute fix to remove this fake program.
Right.
Do we fix it and be the hero, or do we use it as a revenue opportunity to, you know, let's run a diagnostic on your computer just in case?
I won't say it because people know what I'm talking about, so I won't say it. But I had a similar experience where I had one little thing dumped, not to my computer, but had one little thing done, and they told me, oh, these four other things need to be done. And yeah, no. I happened with my car once. I was driving across the country, and I stopped, and the guy checked my oil, and he comes back, and he says, well, you need your cabin filter changed, and you need your air filter changed in your engine and all this other stuff. Yep. And I said, really? And he went, yeah. I said, wow. Okay, here's what we're going to do. I'll call my lawyer. He goes, what? Well, I just had that stuff done in Rochester. And it was all just done. So if it didn't get done, I need you guys. We're going to take pictures. We'll verify it. I'll get my lawyer here. And we'll sue their asses. He goes, well, wait a minute. Let me check. This is serious. Let me check. Because Beck says, I'm sorry, wrong car. Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, right.
Nice, nice save.
I'm quite amazed that it was the wrong car.
Son of a...
I was, at the time, the only Ford Taurus in the place. And I was just there to get, he was checking my oil, you know.
Isn't that amazing, though?
Yeah.
I've got a friend whose Lexus, the engine blew, Jersey, I think it was, you know, on a road trip, and apparently this Lexus has an engine recall for engine problems. Then the Lexus dealer down there won't honor it because they're saying, well, you never got the oil changed. Okay, here's a receipt I got 2 weeks before we drove it to Jersey that says the oil changed and everything was fine. And so we're looking at, you know, trying to get it back to Rochester to get the local, you know, $500 to tow it back to Rochester.
Oh, yeah, ouch.
So we're thinking, well, if we rent a, you know, tow bar and drive down ourselves.
Or you call your lawyer.
Yeah.
That's what you do. You call your lawyer. That's why God made lawyers.
Yep. And there's $500.
That's right. I'd rather give him the $500.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Usually the threat alone will do it. I call my lawyer, and he will find out why you will not honor the dealer warranty since you're a dealer.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, pit bulls are gender in the IRC chat. It says pit bulls for rent. The best ones are, you know, and they're yours. They're your pit bulls.
And we know some Goombas, yeah.
We know some Goombas, that's right. That's right.
We probably know of quite a few.
I know quite a few down there. They will bring their own baseball bats. You don't even have to supply those.
Ooh.
One thing, you know, I had a couple folks do some pickups this morning, and one of them was back in for the second time because he made the mistake of letting his daughter borrow his netbook. And he goes, you know, this is getting pretty tiring. I go, well, one, you shouldn't allow her to do it if it's that important of a machine to you. He goes, I got virus protection on there. I go, yeah, but you also have to run the spyware scans and the malware scans because viruses aren't as popular as they used to be.
No, they generally aren't.
It's malware and you know, spyware that is the big thing right now that they're trying to steal your information through that.
Yep.
We had a PC come into the shop this week, and their symptom was virus.
Yeah.
That's not a symptom. That's a diagnosis.
Right.
But the last time the virus scan was done on it was a year ago when I did it.
Nice. And they're just now finding a virus?
Yeah, it was clean then. It's infected again now.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ, 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Back in just a few minutes, Dave, Steve, Nick. And you, it's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 hours and 38 minutes, we are Soundbites.
And we're simply irresistible.
No, that was superstition.
Superstitious?
Yep. Oh, superstition.
Wrong. I brought in my Shazam, but it doesn't play long enough for Shazam to catch it.
Yeah,
I was trying it during the polka show, and Shazam doesn't apparently know any polka.
Well, you were holding it up to the ceiling like it was the birth of the Lion King.
I was holding it to the speaker.
I was wondering whether he's doing an offering.
Take it,
computer gods.
That's right, because that's where the speakers are in the other room, and it was just very weird. All right, here's this. I love this. Netflix said it reached a multi-year deal with film distributor Miramax.
You made my day when I read that one.
My pleasure. To stream hundreds of titles through the movie rental company's instant viewing service. Financial terms of the deal weren't disclosed. In March, the Wall Street Journal reported that Miramax, the studio behind some of the most iconic independent movies of recent decades, and to Netflix, will close a 5-year deal worth more than $100 million. The latest agreement comes as media chiefs are beginning to shift their public stance toward the fast-growing company by trying to convince investors that the streaming service will expand their business rather than destroy it. Starting in June, Netflix will offer several hundred Miramax titles through its online streaming service to subscribers in the U.S. and add dozens of movies on a rotating basis. I can't wait. Netflix said the deal marks the first time Miramax titles are available through a digital subscription service. Miramax film library includes major titles as The English Patient, Good Will Hunting, Pulp Fiction, both Kill Bills, as well as The Scream and most of the Scary Movie franchises. The deal marks a milestone for the investor group that bought Miramax from Walt Disney last year for $660 million. To earn back its investment, the company is aggressively seeking lucrative distribution deals in new and old media alike. How will this change your media viewing habits? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. Man, I can't wait. I've been a Netflix person for a long time. It's, what, $8 a month, $9 a month now for a single user and to get all those Miramax films and plus all the Stars stuff and all the movies that are already there. It's unbelievable. And of course I have a Roku, so I get all that other stuff that comes with the Roku box. It's just uncool. This is really the right time for me because I'm going to be finished with my master's degree one way or the other by Monday morning. I will be done. So this comes just in time for me to put my feet up and start watching stuff on television again.
Microsoft apparently signed a deal with Hulu, Because I got an ad in my email this morning for, as an Xbox Live subscriber, I can get a free month of Hulu Plus.
Nice.
Which, you know, $8, I guess. But then the other big Microsoft news is that Microsoft is partnering with a couple of PC vendors, I think HP and Dell, that if you buy a PC over $700, you get a free Xbox.
Nice.
Which sounds pretty good, and until you look at it, and it's the $199 Xbox. So it's the right. cheapest Xbox cheapest that you, then Xbox. You got to spend another couple hundred dollars to deck out.
Right, exactly.
No, I've been loving Netflix in that, you know, you can start a movie, you know, have it downloaded to my TV, stop it, and, you know, lately I can't stay awake too late, so right. I pass out, and then I can, you know, and I just stop it. And I can come back, and it's still at that point, and continue on.
I have a Roku box, and I absolutely love it. I'm on Netflix. Well, was before I was working on these papers all the time. It's great. You can mm-hmm. watch lots and lots of movies, lots and lots of TV shows, Starz specials, all kinds of stuff. And now adding all the Miramax films, I'm very
yeah. Because I just finally learned how to, you know, because they're you can click on them, say play, and they'll play right there on your computer.
Right.
I finally learned how to put them in my queue so that when I pull them up on my TV, I can sit there and go through the list, say, play that one.
On a Windows machine, on a Mac, mm-hmm. and on the iPad. Yep. There's a Netflix app for iPad. So mm-hmm. That's pretty nice. But for the rest of us, the Linux users, having that Roku box, $59 for Pete's sake.
Where are you going?
Really, seriously. Well worth it. And, of course, playing it on my from my Roku box, playing on my big TV.
And what would be interesting and a little scary is that with like the Xbox Kinect and the Sony Move, that the cameras built into these game consoles, it recognizes you've nodded off and fallen asleep and automatically pauses the movie.
I love that idea.
But then what else is it watching you do?
Well, exactly. Exactly. Listen, if you're doing stuff in front of the TV you don't want people to know.
Yeah.
That's why God made a bedroom with a door. Use that instead. All right, we're going to go to the phones. Our first caller today is Steve from the mighty, mighty Rochester, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's your question?
Well, I have an older computer that goes back to like 2003. It had an OEM Windows XP Home Edition on it, and it's totally gone dead. It's more or less when you turn it on the keyboard, you get those three lights over the numeric pad go on and off. And still, you know, the DVD and CD player open and close, but nothing comes on.
Right.
I've been told that I need a new motherboard for this. Now, my question is, as far as by getting another one, like a refurbished one or something, if I put a new motherboard on there, will I still be able to use that same OEM operating system that came with the computer, or will that be locked out because of something that has a connection with that old motherboard that I take out of there?
What do you have on it there
Windows
now?
Windows XP Home.
Windows XP Home.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're still going to have to. You're going to have to install Windows over Windows. Because
well, no, he's getting it. If it's a new Logic, what you're going to have to install Windows again because of the different drivers on the new motherboard.
Mm-hmm. But probably a different version.
Right.
It can still be
well if it's
the
motherboard.
Yeah.
The it
problem.
Could be the hard drive.
The problem is there's the bigger issue that it might be RAM, it might be hard drive, there might be something else wrong with the computer, not the whole motherboard.
Yeah.
But the licensing issue is the big stumbling block. If that's say a Dell OEM disk. Then you cannot use it on another motherboard. So it depends on the actual license that came with the disk. And if it's a generic OEM disk, you know, that's the stuff Dave and I sell when we mm-hmm. sell PCs, it's already been activated to that one computer, usually based on the MAC address of that logic board. So oftentimes when you try to install it on a new machine, it won't, and you have to call Microsoft and tell them you're getting a new computer, the old one is dead. Because technically it is a new computer because there's new components in it, and they'll give you a temporary number over the phone. The problem there is it's XP, and XP is not supported anymore.
So you may not be able to get it at all.
Yeah, that's the problem with putting a new motherboard.
I think activating it should still be okay. Like
maybe.
You say, as far as any other additional drivers and that type of stuff, if it's like I say, it can be the same motherboard, but just a couple versions different. Say
yep.
a version A versus a version D. You know, that revision enough is sometimes enough to mess it up, and drivers may need to be updated, and it might not be supported.
First, you need to figure out really if it's the motherboard, the RAM, or the hard drive. And then this may be the perfect time to learn Linux.
Then you don't have to worry about Microsoft licensing issues.
Well, see, here's the problem with that. I have software that's directly, that I use for graphic arts, that's directly connected with Windows, and it won't work on Linux. I could use the GIMP. That's about it.
Right.
But I can't use Corel software, and that's what I need.
Some of it you can, but not all of it. Right. The big thing, then, you're probably looking at least a refurbished computer, if not a new one. And if you're gonna want something powerful enough to run Windows 7. I mean, particularly if it's mm-hmm. something you do for a living.
Graphics, yeah.
But even if it's just graphics, unless you're incredibly patient, which you clearly are, because you're using it on an old machine with Windows XP Home, the reality is that you can't buy anything less than Windows 7 now if you're going to stick with the Windows world, and that requires a much more powerful machine.
And I'd go Windows 7 64-bit. You can put 8 gig of memory in it. And with Corel, the way it's always got to redraw, it would fly. And you get a decent graphics card, you know, say a 1 gig graphics card right now, and you're just going to be sitting there with your jaw hanging on the floor because you're going to be in awe. And just, you know, the way it'll handle it so much better than even XP right now.
Okay, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
No problem.
Yeah, we ruminated about that a couple of weeks ago when we talked about XP support ending and what happens when people need to reinstall their current XPs. And
they don't. Microsoft doesn't care.
Right.
They want you. They don't make money if they reactivate.
Right.
They only make money if you buy new. So they're
really encouraging the new.
They're done now. It's go buy a new copy, buy a new machine.
Well, for the most part, though, Dell's, all you got to do is if it's, you know, a Dell and you got the same motherboard, it'll usually go. I mean, that's been my experience when they've had folks have called up Dell and gotten a replacement motherboard. They've sent it to me, you know, and I got to put it in, and I got to redo the Windows because, yes, it's the same motherboard, but it's a different version.
It's also a different Mac address, so you may have to call Windows.
No, with the Dell so far, I haven't had to.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. It must be the arrangement Dell has with Microsoft. You know, because, I mean, they even got arrangements with UPS. They don't even store the monitors. UPS houses them in a warehouse.
Right.
Although the blinking lights on the keyboard may be an error code of some sort.
That's right. Without knowing what his model is or anything else, we can't really say. But, yeah, it's the real problem is when something is that dead, it's... It's hard for us to diagnose over the air.
You can't. I wouldn't even try to. You know.
We had one this week where the power wouldn't come on. You push the button, nothing happened. Well, it sounds like the power supply. So we put a new power supply in it, still nothing. Probably the logic board then.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's over the phone, it sounded, you know, like the power supply.
Right.
When you don't power on, it's probably the power supply.
Yep.
And Microsoft, not Microsoft, Google is selling Chrome notebooks now, Chrome OS notebooks now.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody going to buy one? Give us a call, 5-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. The Chrome notebook.
I don't think they've announced the pricing yet, have they?
A few hundred bucks. Yeah, you can order them from Amazon, actually, I think it is.
They don't have the price online.
They did.
Last time I looked, let me check again. The only thing you can do is put your name on a list to be notified when they're available to buy.
Amazon and Best Buy
are both partners.
Somewhere around $300 to $400, depending on whether you buy the Samsung or the Asus. The Chrome OS, of course, is Google's new operating system that is really designed to live in the cloud. It's really essentially just the Chrome OS browser, and everything else you do up in the cloud. You do Google Docs or whatever for your word processing and spreadsheets and stuff, and things like that. So there's a bunch of systems. They're supposed to be coming out. Samsung and Acer are the only ones now.
June 15th is when they're available, and neither Best Buy nor Amazon have prices on their website.
Really? Man, I saw prices somewhere. I don't know where.
I've seen a lot of blogs estimating what the price is going to be, but no actual store that says, here's the price.
Yeah. Yeah. We've had a lot of people saying, well, I can't use it because I'm a programmer. I can't use it because I'm a graphic artist. Okay, it's not for you.
Yeah.
Get over yourself. You're not the entire
center of the universe.
Buy things. Exactly right. I know a bunch of people for whom that would be the ideal computer. It really is all they need. They don't need anything else. The few letters they write, they mostly do email, they do Facebook, they do Twitter. Those things are all available on it, and that's all they do. They're always somewhere where they can get a signal. If not, buy yourself a Wi-Fi card and go from there. But for most people, they're only that's all they need. In fact, I think these things come with
3G built in, and you get 100 megs a month for free.
Which is not a lot for us, but for a person who's only doing email, you're certainly not going to do Farmville with 100 meg a month. Email, it's enough. So it depends on what you do and who you are and where you're going. But for a lot of people, this is really actually more computer than they will ever need. And so it is my belief that that there are a number of people who will find this a great computer for themselves and the ability to have something small and light that they can carry around. And here's the best part about it for a lot of people. If you lose it, who cares? Because unless they have unless you're one of those people who makes the computer save your username and password. If you don't do that, and put it in every time, which takes you all of 5 seconds, you lazy son of a pup. Then you're done. Even if somebody steals it, they get nothing.
There's virtually no local storage. Right. Everything is in the cloud.
Right. They get nothing of yours. And for people who are security conscious, what a great way to go. It can't get a virus. There are no viruses for it. Won't be
for a while,
possibly forever, because if there's no way to write to the operating system, if there's no local storage in which to store the virus, you can't get a virus. I'm sorry, it's just not possible.
Although the pop-up fake antivirus messages will still try to confuse you.
Well,
although,
exactly. Although what if they do?
The target market for this product would be people that would know that was fake and not fall for it.
Well, but if you fall for it, so what? There's no place it can store the virus.
It steals your credit card number when you buy the fake program.
Well, yes, that part, yes. All right, our next caller is Jeff from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Jeff. What's your question?
So I have a question about Netflix.
Sure.
So first time I started using it, I have a Sony Bravio TV.
Okay.
So it's installed as an applet in their OS. I ran into problems with it buffering. So I switched over to Apple TV, and I've been using it for about 4 months now. So the strange thing I notice is usually at night, maybe after 9 p.m., it not only runs into a buffering problem, but it actually takes down my whole network at home.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can run and stream Apple movies no problem. It's only with Netflix I experience this problem.
Well, there's a couple of things at work here. First, there's the fact that if it's after 9 o'clock, are you on cable modem or are you on DSL?
I have cable.
Yeah.
Turbo service?
Yeah. But there's your problem. Cable service is shared closer to you than DSL is. DSL, you go straight to the central office, which is, of course, neither central nor an office, before you join the backbone. With cable, all of your neighborhood machines are on a single, what's called a head end. And once you hit that head end, you're sharing bandwidth with your entire neighborhood. Before it goes to the next thing. So what we're going to do is you stay on the line, Jeff, because we have to take a break right now. But you stay on the line, and I'll finish this explanation when we come back, which we will do in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Jeff from Rochester, New York, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to Soundbites right here on the truly great, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
I'm Steve.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we have Jeff on the line. All right, Jeff. So now I've told you how the network looks, right?
Understood.
Okay. Now, normally, I would say that might be your problem. But if you have the problem with Bravia, not with Apple, right?
I have the problem with both. And actually, in Apple, it crashes the whole network. The other thing is, it never does it when I stream from, from the Apple TV service.
Just from Netflix.
You got it.
That's interesting.
Netflix is getting too popular?
Well, except, now here's the problem. I mean, we use Netflix at home. I don't think my wife and my daughter are ever off Netflix anymore, unless Doctor Who or B is on. I'm confused now. I mean, I could say it would be, we know it's not the TV or the Apple TV. It's not your Sony or your Apple.
Well, what I'm convinced of is if I put a media PC next to my TV or a laptop that has an HDMI output and just use that, it'll work all the time.
Could be something to do with the processor in the devices. The Apple TV has a dual-core A5.
Right.
The Sony probably has an Atom in it, maybe dual-core.
Right.
And decoding the video stream could take more processing power than the device has. But I haven't seen any...
But why would they put it in there?
But would the decoding for Netflix then be any different for the Apple TV?
It shouldn't be. And it's supposed to check on your throughput speed and automatically give you the right quality of video based on your internet speed. So maybe you're getting... Since you said you got Roadrunner Turbo, maybe your speed is too high and you're getting too much video. That's an interesting question. There's a lot of complaints on the Netflix boards and other places about Netflix buffering too much.
Yeah, it's interesting it does it at 9 o'clock, which the only thing I figure is that's when the West Coast comes online.
Exactly.
Yeah, so now you have all the East Coast people after dinner and the West Coast people, just got home from school and got home from work.
Well, I'm wondering if the problem isn't your router. I mean, if it crashes your entire network, that can't be coming from the Apple TV. You might crash that. It can't be coming from the Bravia. You might crash that. But to crash your entire network, it's got to be something that controls your entire network.
Yeah, it's pretty bizarre. That's why I think it could be something, actually, as you mentioned, that I'm sharing the bandwidth.
Yeah.
And the cable system.
Probably a combination of all three.
Well, what router?
Not an easy one to solve, especially when you hook a PC up to it and it works.
Well, and that's the other thing.
What have you reset your LAN router lately, or even your cable router?
Yeah, you have to do a hard reset of everything. Once it takes it down, once the Apple TV takes down the network, you have to hard boot the router and the modem.
Well, here's what I'm wondering: is it possible that because the computer will have more RAM in it, it buffers better?
Right, that's my theory.
And it's not that the Apple TV is taking the network down as such, or the Bravia as such. What's happening is it's confusing your router in saying, you got to hold on, I've got all the data I can handle, and the router's not fast enough to keep up. And that's what's taking your network down. Because at some point, the problem is the router, right? It's got to be the router because that's the only thing that can take the whole network down.
Yeah, so at the end of all this, I think I've given up on all these boxes, and I'm just going to put a Pentium-based media server next to my TV.
That certainly would work. The other thing I would try is, what is your router?
It's a Linksys router.
Oh, there you go. Sorry.
That's a good
Sorry.
One.
Well, if it's a new one, it's a good one. If it's an old one, it's not so good.
No, it's new.
That should work then, but that's the only other thing I can think of. I don't.
Yeah, most of these set-top boxes only have 256 megs of RAM, 512 megs if you're lucky, and putting a real computer there is much better in terms of performance, but also more options because then you have all the internet-based stuff, web-based stuff, plus all the application-based stuff on it.
Right.
We have a lot of people using the Mac Mini for that as a home media center too.
Right.
My next suggestion is what would you recommend for that type of a platform to put there?
Certainly a Mac Mini will do it. Myth TV, which is a Linux distribution, you can just load that into any old machine you have. It'll run fine. The big question is whatever you get better have HDMI if you've got an HDMI TV.
Right.
So something like a Mac Mini already has that.
Yep.
Certainly the higher-end server version.
You have 500 gigs of storage space for local storage. Yeah. Yeah,
you can put a second 500 gig drive in it and have a terabyte of storage. That certainly works for me.
Should help.
Good stuff. Okay, well, I appreciate the help.
All right, good luck.
You know how you make out, please.
Thanks, guys.
Yep.
wonder if the Roku has it.
Could be bad cabling, too, somewhere along the line.
It's possible. I mean,
if he's it's doing hard everything. To
know. Yeah, you're not there. You can't see it. So
right.
You know.
And again, the problem with home users is they don't have an extra router lying around or a bunch of extra cables mm-hmm. lying around or an extra Apple TV lying around that where you can trade this stuff out and see what doesn't work. Because now there's no diagnostics anymore. It's not like you can hook up a Fluke to it or anything and... I mean, you can. I suppose you can do that to the cables, certainly.
This week, I had a wild one. Setting up some stuff on the bench, and it's just about quitting time. So I set another one up there, and I just quick hook it up, get it booting, and I figure, oh, I'll get it later on. So I went out to dinner. I come back, and my granddaughter goes, Grandpa, I tried resetting the machine. We're not getting any email. So I'm going around. Checking the router, rebooting it, resetting everything. Darn it, I'm not getting it. So then I hook up the wireless. The wireless, because I hooked right, with my little netbook, I'm getting on, and I'm getting an address. That's not right. All of a sudden, I don't know why, out of the blue, it clicks on me. Wait a minute, I hooked up this one machine. And they said it's been acting funny. Sure enough, I unplugged the network from it. Mm-hmm. Rebooted, everything came back up. The motherboard is so funky, it was periodically locking things up and everything else, and it locked up my whole network.
Yep, I'll bet it was beaconing. What that does is the network card mm-hmm. is beaconing, and what that's doing is when a computer starts up, the network card says, "Hey, here I am. Mm-hmm. Where's the server?" And then it gets an answer, and it moves on from there. In beaconing, it never listens for the answer. It just spends uh-huh. all day going, hey, I'm here. Can somebody answer me? And it floods the network, and nothing else can get out. So I'll almost guarantee you stick a different network card in there. Mm-hmm. Problem solved.
Probably. I forget
also, what the hell is wrong with you if the shop and your home are on the same network segments? You should be isolating... The shop? What? What the hell?
It is no. My upstairs ones were okay. It was just
downstairs.
Yeah, no, she was downstairs working on her machine. Yeah, she finally is getting around to repairing her own. I won't do it. She knows how to do it. I've taught her. So it's like, well, I've been so busy, Grandpa. And it's like, yeah, and I'm not doing it. You know how to do it. You want your computer working. You want to get it on the network. It's there. You fix your own machine.
Now, one thing you have to explain to the audience is how old is your granddaughter?
She is 21.
Because usually when you hear these stories about grandpa and the kids, it's the 6 and 7 year old.
No, he's
so
he's
I'm
old.
Thinking the six year old fix your own computer.
That's right. He's old.
No, yes, I am. I mean, I got 6 grandchildren. The oldest one is 21, and the youngest is. 3.
Time for great grandchildren.
You see this pen? It can be a deadly weapon.
If you folks could have seen the look, it would have burned your eyes out. I was only off to the side and my hair is singed. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
My grandmother got married when she was 15, and it caused a family scandal. Because her older sister was unmarried.
Unbelievable.
Yep. Didn't matter. She was 15. Her older sister was unmarried.
16, 17?
Yep.
Yeah.
17, yeah. So she had a baby at 16, who had a baby at 16, who had a baby at 16, had a baby at 16, had a baby at 16.
There you go.
Yep. So we had 5 generations of boys and 5 generations of girls in my mother's family alive at the same point.
That's amazing.
Yep. So grandmother at 32, great-grandmother at 48, great-great-grandmother at 54.
Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Well, and that's where you get everybody together for the picture. Nobody believes it.
Yeah, I've had 400 cousins at the family reunion.
No, my granddaughter can wait, and I'll be glad that she does. I mean, God love her. I don't want to be a great-great-grandfather.
Not yet.
Give me another 10 years.
Exactly.
I'm 72.
Right.
Not at 62.
Mm-mm.
All right.
Mm-mm. I'm 60. I'm not even ready for my daughter to have children yet. I'm just not ready. I'm not. Thank God she doesn't seem to be ready either yet.
Well, that's good. I notice that in a lot of the young kids nowadays. They're more into waiting until they're in their 30s. or older. Yeah, early 30s, late 20s, which is good. You know, enjoy life right now.
Well, I was a late baby. My daughter was a late baby, so we'll see. You know, we're the other way around from your family. We waited late.
Well, my mother was the youngest girl, so she has nieces and nephews that are older than her brother, who's younger than he is. So I've got a cousin that played with her uncle when he was a baby.
Yeah, right. That's the thing that screws up families. You know that? Yeah. Well, when I was a kid, of course, I come from a traditional Italian family. So everybody, when I was a kid, everybody past puberty was an aunt or an uncle. It didn't matter how lightly they were related to you, sometimes even just in the family of man.
Mm-hmm.
But they were aunt and uncle. So I've got aunts and uncles and therefore cousins that I'm completely not related to in any way, shape, or form. Could marry in any state of the union, but that's my aunt and my uncle, my cousins. You know, that's the way that works.
Well, I came, you know, my dad's one of 19.
You people needed a TV.
God love my grandmother.
My mom's one of 11. No, 9. Her mom was one of 11.
Yeah, well, I'm one of 6, but I mean, you know, someone asked me, you know, about family and that. And, you know, family is just there. You know, I mean, I can go over to my grandmother's. And I always tell the story, you know, if I take a friend over there, I said, we could go over there when my grandmother was alive. It didn't matter whether it was early in the morning, late at night. She always had a pot of coffee on and some food. And, you know, I could have brought some friends over and said, hey, Grandma, how you doing? She'd, boom, set us all down. And, come on, you got to eat. Got to eat. You want something to drink? Yeah. She was always baking, and you could just sit there. And that's how I got to catch up with a lot of my aunts and uncles was going to my grandmother's.
Because
that was more or less the central area. That, you know, you'd get them throughout the week. You could stop there at any time. And, oh, there's Uncle Bill, there's Uncle John, and my aunts and cousins.
Every one of my aunts and uncles and cousins had a specialty. And you couldn't leave the house without some. You know, whether they made cakes or cannolis or my aunt did tripe, which was just unbelievably tasty. One time I was in college and we were having a cast party and it's like 6 o'clock in the morning. And I said, I got to go home. It's Easter. No, it was Pentecost. And I got to go home. It's Pentecost Sunday. I got to go to church. And like 10 people, 15, 20 people, because we took 3 cars and filled them, so that's at least 6 people in a car.
There's
like 18 people. They said, "Oh, well, I'll go with you." We pull up to my house, and they suddenly realized that there were 18 people at 6 o'clock in the morning at my house. They're all going, "We better go." I said, "No, it's not going to be a problem." My mother opens the door to see who's there, and she sees 18 people there, 19 with me, and we all came in. We all came in. She made us all breakfast. Bacon, eggs, toast, coffee, whatever we wanted. We all went to church. Well, some of us went to church. Some of us crashed on the couch. While we were at church, she went out and bought cold cuts, and when we came back, we had lunch. That's the way it was. That's the way it was in those days. You know?
Yeah, I mean, back in the days, you know, teenager.
All farm families. My mother's a farm family, farm girl. My dad's a city boy, so they met in college, and the family joke is that mom didn't know how to buy food.
Yeah.
So dad had to teach her. You know, you want eggs, you go out to the barn. You want, you know, beef, you go out to the barn. Yeah.
Right. If it isn't out in the field or in the barn, yeah, you don't eat it.
Yeah. Well, I had the same experience as you. You know, my friend Kurt Johnson, best friend, we used to have paper routes, and we'd finish our paper routes. He'd come home with me. He'd crash on the couch, and, you know, I'd go on down to my room. We'd get a couple more hours sleep, and mom would come down. There's Kurt curled up on the couch, and you go, come on, Kurt, you can help make breakfast. Get up and start making breakfast, you know, and whoever came over, threw it on. I mean, with a big family, it's just always something we did.
And also in the summer, if it was light out, I got kicked out of the house. And I wasn't to come back to the house till it was dark. The streetlights came on, I came in, right?
Yeah.
But throughout the day, if you needed a drink of water, use a bathroom, whatever, you didn't have to go to your house.
No.
Every house on the block was open. You just knocked on the door. And
hey, can I use the bathroom?
Yeah.
Instead of running all the way home.
All the families on our street had different bells. So you'd ring the bell. Okay, Bill, that's your mom. You got to go home now for dinner.
Bells.
We had cowbells and jingle bells, and you know, and my mom just hollered. And,
yeah, that's the way my mother did it.
It's about 6 o'clock. Dad just got home from work. You know, it's dinner time. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's the way it was in those days. Not anymore, though.
Yep.
No, my mother would just stick out the door and say, kids, it's time to eat. And, all right, I got to go. And, you know, because my brothers and sisters were around the neighborhood. All right, we got to go. See you after dinner.
Yep.
And that's
the
thing. Kids don't get out as much anymore.
Yep.
Well, it's scary because you know my son is 12 now, and I want him to go out and play, but I'm scared of him going out and play.
Well, I was the same way with my daughter. Absolutely, it's very different from the way it was. If you didn't see your kid all day, it was like, yeah, he's at somebody's house.
Yeah.
It's all safe wherever it is. All right, we're going to take a break. You've wasted an entire hour of your remaining six, so there's five left to go. Listening to us, and we've got another hour for you to waste. But you're going to have to wait through these delightful underwriter messages. And then we will be back on the other side of that with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. And for no discernible reason, you continue to listen to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites right here on the gratefully member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more of this sort of nonsense.
Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free, 1-800-790-0415. You can also text us at
209-9010. And that is in the 585 area code.
Right. And so please give us a call. We'll be happy to take your question. In the meantime, tired of watching cat videos on YouTube, looking for something with a little more substance? Google on Wednesday unveiled YouTube Town Hall, which will feature debates between members of Congress on hot button issues. How would you vote if you focused purely on the ideas needed to make our country and our world a better place rather than on the parties putting them forward? That's a question that the new YouTube Town Hall seeks to answer, Google said in a blog post. To that end, YouTube Town Halls will feature two short videos from two members of Congress in which they explain their views on the economy, healthcare, or Afghanistan, for example. If you agree with one person, click support. Their popularity will be tracked via the site's leaderboard. The member's political party won't be immediately disclosed, so ideally you're basing your decision on the content of the remarks rather than political affiliation. Won't that be new for the last 20 years? The first video, however, disclosed that Representative Chris Van Hollen was representing the Democratic vision for the budget, while Senator John Isaacson discussed how Republicans are working to rein in spending, so it was pretty obvious who they represented. The other videos did not mention political party, but if you're a politics junkie at all, you probably recognize some of the participants, including Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid and Senator John McCain. Also, it seems that the Democrat videos are on the left, while the GOP is on the right. Very subtle clue there. At any rate, YouTube Town Hall currently features Representatives John Garamendi and Steve Chabot talking about the economy, Representatives Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Phil Gingrey discussing health care, and Representatives Kay Hagan and Lamar Alexander on education, among others. Google selected those topics because they were the most popular on Google News and in Google Search over the past year. YouTube Town Hall will also allow users to pose questions. Every month, members of Congress will add new videos to the site answering a selection of the top voted questions, Google said. So if you're interested in lowering gas prices, reforming the tax system, or making college more affordable, ask now. There's also the option to share a particular debate on Twitter and Facebook. And in just a few moments, Steve will have the address of the YouTube town hall up. So our question to you, how well do you think this will work? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Or, of course, you can also text us a message at
585-209-9010. And we got it right up here. So, you know, the minute you have a question, please put it up there and, you know, we'll gladly get it on the air, especially, you know, for the folks that are sitting out maybe in their car or sitting, say, on the beach or something listening to us and it's just too noisy. You can just text us.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Trying to make it as convenient as we can. And Rob is doing all these different, trying all this different technology, which is kind of cool, you know, getting us into the 21st century.
Yeah, kicking and screaming.
Yeah, all the way, no problem. Oh, while we sort of at a lull here, I want to put in a shameless plug for my show.
Why?
Why not?
Oh, right.
Because I can and I'm on the board. I don't know. Sounds good to me.
Works for me.
But, yeah, no, I'm doing Thursday nights now, and I encourage folks, you know, if you've got...
By doing Thursday nights, you mean you're DJing on the air.
That's where I was going to... Yeah, just yeah, about to explain.
90.1, okay.
I'm on Thursday nights from 6 to 9, and I'm there to take your music. As we have said here before, and a lot of folks don't realize it, Rob has put together one heck of a genre of programs. I mean, us. We're the only talk show here on Jazz 90.1. And he's got...
And at this rate, we may be the only one.
Yeah. And, I mean, he's got Latin shows. He's got Otto Bruno doing, you know, the Sinatra and the Rat Pack and all that. I mean, there's
and
just the polka show, the
George
German show.
Coming in to do the German show.
I mean, there's just such an array of...
Our polka buddies.
Yep. Different music that's played here. But it all comes down to, folks, you got to remember, throughout the week and quite, you know, most evenings, this is your station. So that's why I am trying to encourage you on Thursday nights. You know, you can email me, dave@jazz901.org, on a particular artist that you would like to hear. Because, you know, the three of us are new here at Jazz 90.1. Matter of fact, this coming June 5th, we'll celebrate our second anniversary that Rob took a chance and brought us here. And it's been great. We're having
a lot
of fun.
Seems like 10 years, doesn't it? I mean, it seems just like a day or two.
But we've been having a lot of fun. The listeners are loving it because they're getting to listen to more sound bites, getting their questions answered. So, you know, and keeping that going, I like you folks to encourage you again. You know, on Thursday nights, you know, email me, call, or text me. And I'd love to hear from you folks because I'm learning jazz. And a lot of you folks out there are old jazz diehards. And I'll admit it, I'm new and I'm discovering a lot of artists. I mean, if you were to see this library, I don't know how many CDs we got in there.
It's got to be over 10,000. It's an office size room.
Over 10,000.
And all three of the four walls
are jammed
with CDs.
From floor to ceiling are with CDs, and we even have LPs.
I remember those.
Well, we still got them in there. And, you know, I'm trying to discover this stuff. So, you know, I encourage you folks, if you got a particular artist that you like, if I can find it in the library, I will play it. And I've gotten a number of folks on Thursday nights that are calling me or texting me or sending me emails saying, hey, could you try out this artist? See if you got this. And it's been a lot of fun. And I want to get more folks doing that for my Thursday night show. So if you get a chance, please, shameless plug, give me a listen on Thursday nights from 6 to 9.
See? There you go. And you will find... Did you get this up?
Yeah.
Okay. That you will find that Dave plays some really good music. Jazz is a terrific art form, and if you're not a jazz listener, you owe it to yourself to take a listen to some of the
stuff. Oh, I can't wait for the Jazz Fest.
You get everything from straight-ahead traditional jazz...
Fusion.
...to fusion to everything else on this station throughout the week. So if you don't like one particular thing... You should try any one of the others.
I mean, it's all good. We're only one of 8 jazz stations left in the U.S. that play strictly jazz.
Yep. I actually heard another one as I was going to get my daughter last week.
Oh, really? Where?
Yeah. I'm somewhere in the middle of the country. I really don't remember. Okay. The entire trip blurs in my mind. You know, was I in Idaho, Indiana, Illinois? I don't know.
But she is back home now.
Yeah, she's back home.
Back home safe with mom and dad?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the only thing that matters.
There you go.
It's terrific. She's a good kid, and we're glad she's home. It was a good year. She loved it. She loved it, and in fact, she did great. So, she's a straight A student and honor roll student. So I'm very, very happy.
Can't complain about that.
She was complaining that she actually got one B+.
Ugh.
in the entire year. I mean, out of all every exam she took, she got one B+. And she was complaining, I don't remember the exact numbers,
okay,
but it was like, you know, 3.92 as opposed to a 3.94 or something. I said, let me get this straight. You're complaining about 12 one-hundredths of a point.
Yeah.
Well, when you put it that way, Dad.
Yeah. It's still exactly. A B+, Dad.
Yeah, exactly.
Not an A.
Yeah, exactly.
No, good for her. I mean, it's great that she's setting her goals that high and striding for it.
There it is.
Yeah. Yeah, she's a good kid.
I found it.
Oh, that's nice. She's a good kid. She's and we're very, very happy. But yeah, you know, talking earlier, we were talking about the Google Chrome OS
yes.
notebooks, and a lot of people now are looking to go into the cloud.
I'm storing a lot of stuff up there now.
A lot of people are, and there's always questions about who do you trust and privacy and et cetera, et cetera. But for a lot of businesses, you know, when, for example, our IT gives student accounts, and they've clearly vetted Google enough to know that they satisfy their FERPA and HIPAA problems, questions, so there's no problem with that now. You certainly, you know, they're data mining.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question to that. They're data mining, but not based on an individual. So they don't know that you wrote to Aunt Sally about the cows.
Okay.
They just know somebody wrote about cows.
Mm-hmm.
And if enough people write about cows, then they start thinking, well, we gotta, you know, do something about our cow rankings or mm-hmm. whatever it is. So, you know, that's how they do it. But it's not. Tied to an individual. It's just raw data numbers lost in the data stream somewhere.
Well, that's where I've really liked, you know, listening to you talking. My sister gave me one of those little netbooks.
Yeah.
And most of the stuff now I just store up in the cloud because, you know, trying to conserve space on the netbook, you know, if I need something, it's up there. As long as I can get to a network connection, whether it's wireless or wired, boom, I can go up there. It's there. It's safe. It's secure. I don't have to worry about it. Oh, yeah, here's that file I need. And boom, I can continue working on it. And it doesn't matter whether I'm on, you know, the little netbook or whether I'm on my home computer because that's the original copy, and it's up there, and it's safe. Saving storage.
I keep promising myself I'm going to do some sort of seminar on these things. I'll tell you what. I do it all the time. We were doing a big proposal at work, and a couple of faculty members and I were sharing documents, and the same was true for an outside group I'm working with, and in both cases, we could all edit the documents simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
So I could work on one part while somebody else worked on another part. We had one person putting in bullet points and another person going along behind them and turning that into text.
Okay.
It worked out phenomenally well, and mm-hmm. it's an easy way to collaborate, particularly with among people who are not in the same place. Being able to put stuff out on the web. And what's interesting to me is that Google tells you how much storage space you have,
mm-hmm.
but if you use their document format, at least so far, it doesn't count against your storage.
Oh.
So you can put up 700 gazillion documents
mm-hmm.
that you wrote in Google Docs, right? Whether it's
right.
word processing, a spreadsheet, or a presentation thing, and they don't count. You know, but if you upload a million PDFs,
mm-hmm.
those count
yeah.
against your storage.
I always wonder, how do you back up your Google Docs?
You don't. They do.
They do it.
Well, that's the hope until they lose it. Wasn't there a big Gmail loss a couple of weeks ago?
There wasn't a loss. There was a disconnect.
Yeah.
But I don't think anybody actually...
Yeah, they didn't lose anything. No, they just had the disconnect.
The other thing is, in terms of Google Docs, you can always download anything you want in any format you want.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, which I really like because I use OpenOffice.
Yeah.
Or if you prefer LibreOffice. I don't care. I just download it.
And there's an app
even
for
Microsoft
backing up your Google Docs.
Exactly. There's an app for it. Probably there's a Chrome app for it as well. So if you want to have multiple, and I do, because I like to have things in multiple places. I'm a belt and suspenders kind of guy when it comes to my data. And you should be too. Remember, any one copy of your data can go bad. So if it's your data, and I'm not saying it's the operating system or any of that stuff, but your data. You should have it in at least two places, and those places shouldn't be in the same building.
Mm-mm.
So just putting it on a thumb drive doesn't count.
Nope.
Putting on a thumb drive and taking that thumb drive to work might count, but finding a cloud place to put it, and there are a dozen of them from Dropbox to everything else, to store your data off-site, that's really terrific. And if you're sharing data with a colleague who is out of town, there is no more convenient way to do it. Microsoft is doing it as well. Google is doing it. Zoho, Amazon, of course, has their web services. It's all pretty amazing, I have to say. There's a whole set of protocols that are out there on the net that are all letting people do collaboration, and it's terrific. And I'll tell you what, like I said, if I had a Chrome notebook, I would be using that pretty regularly because it's easy, it's convenient, and most important of all, I don't have to worry about it being stolen or lost or broken because the data are all up on the net somewhere, and I can very, very easily just gather it back up again by getting another device, whether it's a desktop or a netbook or an iPad or another Chrome notebook, and using that to get back online. All my data is still there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm done. It's ridiculously simple and easy. And like you said, having a netbook like this,
yeah,
half of the stuff I do online because there's no reason to store it locally here.
Well,
let's face it, and I don't care what brand you have. I have what I consider to be a high-end brand netbook. But it doesn't matter what brand it is. Computers die. Apple's mm-hmm. die. Lenovo's die. Mac.
And they don't sometimes give you all the warning.
Exactly. Whereas if you've got someplace to store stuff that isn't local, you know, mm-hmm. one of the things that I tend to do is I tend to write stuff up in Google and then download it as an open office document so that I now have it in two places. But if one of my storage things dies. I generally have three or four places. But if it dies, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I'm still covered. I've got it
CYA.
In other places. And the same with you folks. If you're just backing up onto a thumb drive and sticking it on a shelf, that doesn't help if there's a fire in your home. Now, I know you don't want to think about that, but that's the whole point of disaster recovery. What's the worst disaster that can happen? You know, I keep stuff off-site. I keep it in the cloud. Honestly, if all of Rochester, New York is turned into a sheet of nuclear glass, I'm not first going to think about, well, thank God my automotive system is, my little spreadsheet for my gas mileage is safe. That's not going to be my first thought. But the fact is, particularly if you run a business, you need to make sure that your business can get up and running fast and easy. So make sure you do those backups. That's important. That's very important. All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour, and we're going to be back shortly with Sound Bites.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Here's another health tip.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Steve from Menden on the line. Welcome, Steve. What's your question?
Hi. I have a place up in Old Forge, and I have a camera set up there so I can view it online. And
cool.
So I have Roadrunner, and connected to that is a wireless router. And in the back of the wireless router, I connect that camera recorder. And also, I have a internet phone, and the problem is if the power goes out and then comes back on, everybody gets a different IP address, and so I can't access my cameras anymore because it has a new IP address. So I had to disconnect everybody except for the cameras because that was more important to me.
Right.
And I was wondering, is there a way I can fix, you know, the address so every time the power goes out and comes back on, it has the same address?
Maybe.
you can possibly buy a static IP address from the internet provider there, but that'll be quite expensive. One of the things I did is I put a UPS on my cable router, so it never turns off.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing that certainly might help, depending on how long the power
goes out.
Yeah. You'll want to put both the camera and the cable modem
internet,
on there.
Phone.
Yeah, we have that in our office. Most of our security cameras are laptops. So if the power goes off, the laptops keep running with their own battery, and I've got the cable router and our LAN router on the UPS.
Most of the types of cameras you're talking about have a web interface.
Right, that's what I got.
Where you can log in and change some of the parameters, like how often it takes a picture, whether it's taking still photos or movies, yada, 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 right? In addition
to that,
you should find, on some of them at least, they will actually have a place where you can set up a static IP address.
In the camera itself.
In the camera itself. And then every time, if the power goes out and it comes back on again, what happens is the camera will say, no, my address is 192.168.1.15 or whatever number you give it.
If he's got a range, if he's got a range within the router, say it's addresses, say 120 to 140, you know, it's 192.168.1, say .120 to 140, and each PC just goes around and assigns it that number, because his domain number might switch, but within the PC, because if they're getting confused, because if the camera's still holding on to that one address, and when they reboot the router, the router's trying to now assign...
Right, it's first come, first serve. So
yeah, so if you assign each PC with a number...
Assign each camera with a static address.
Yeah, each PC with a static address in it, then when it reboots, yes, your DNSs might change, but your numbers within your PC won't.
Well, but wait a minute, hold on. Your camera must have an external IP address.
Well, is it a standalone camera, or is it a camera connected to a computer?
It's a standalone device. You know, it's a camera connected to a box that has a video recorder built into it with an Ethernet port that connects to your router.
So
there's no computer involved.
Well, that is a computer, that box the cameras are plugged into. That's the box you have to put a static IP on.
Yeah, can you put a static IP address in that?
Right. That's what you have to look up. The other
still, would that matter? Because that's after the wireless.
What you're saying
is
the cable modem gets a different address every time.
Okay.
DNS. The DNSs can change because you're not setting those. All you're going to set is
The DNS almost doesn't matter. It's the IP.
No, hold on. Stop and listen. If he's behind a cable modem, then he's got a 192.168 address for the camera, which is not routable. So how is he getting an address that goes out onto the internet? He's got to be talking about the cable router address itself, or he's in the not the no man's zone. What do you call it?
DMZ.
DMZ.
Yeah. So there's the thing. There's two IP addresses involved. One is the IP address of your cable router, which is your public internet address that you get into from outside. And then
I don't deal with that one because that one's before I can.
But,
I don't
so,
care about that one.
So that one already is static, or that one doesn't change.
You don't care if that one changes.
That one probably changes, but it's the one after the wireless router
when it goes out. To get into that network from outside, you'll need to know the cable router's public address. And then you also have IP addresses on every device inside your network. And those addresses can also change every time the computers boot. It's first come, first serve. So PC1 turns on, it gets address 1. PC2 turns on second, it gets address 2. The next time it reboots, the next time it reboots, PC2 gets it first, and it ends up with address 1.
That's why if you assign them.
So each of those PCs, you can assign a static address. And that camera controller that has its own Ethernet card, you'll need to assign it a static address so that you can address it through your router.
That way it doesn't matter because the DNS is most likely will change when it reboots. It just happens that way.
Okay, so I can go in through the wireless router and tell them what address.
Each PC. Got to go to each PC and assign it a static address.
So you tell that camera computer to be address 10, and then you go into your wireless router and say, forward my camera traffic to address 10. So that you can see it from outside the network.
Right, so that it never changes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What you do is you take a look, next time you are there with them, take a look and see what kind of numbers they're getting. It's 192.168.1. That's something. And is that something low or high? Because it depends on the router as to whether it gives, starts low or starts high.
Yeah.
So if it's all low, then give that camera a static high address so it never gets bumped into. If it's high, conversely, give that router a static low address.
Yeah, because usually you can go into it. If you say you're on the machine, you can go to where it says run, and if you're running Windows XP or even Vista or Windows 7,
this camera
you can type in CMD.
The camera controller may not have a PC interface.
Right, no, but just to find out what range he's talking about, if he goes in there and does, you know, goes to the run command, and then when he's got a DOS window open and he puts ipconfig/all, that will give him the IP addresses and the DNSs.
Of the machine he's on.
Of the machine he's on, so he knows what range he's working with.
Right, and what's important is knowing if that DNS ends in a high or a low number, if that IP address, rather, ends in a high or a low number, and then picking the other range for the other one. I had to do that with my print computer. The computer
Print server?
My print server.
Okay.
It was every time the system rebooted, and for a while it was doing that nicely in the thunderstorms. Thanks a lot.
Love that because it's Jap security for me.
Exactly. Even though I had most things isolated, some things are harder to isolate than others. And it would reboot and get a different address, and nobody could print until I went and changed. So I just went in, and my particular router starts high. So everything was getting, you know, 155, 154. So I just set it down to like 12, and it'll all be good.
That's one of the features of the zero config protocol. Apple calls it Bonjour. IEEE calls it zero config, where you can address machines by name rather than by number.
Right.
So a lot of printers, HP supports Bonjour, a lot of other printer companies will publish the printer's address to the network by name, so then it can change its IP address and you don't worry about it on your computer because it finds it by name.
Right.
But that's only newer devices that support that zero config protocol.
Right.
Okay. I think what I'll try the UPS thing first.
Yeah, start with that. If you don't put a lot of devices on it and the power is not off for long and you buy a high-end, that is to say, long-lasting UPS, you probably won't have this problem again.
Yeah. Can you add an external battery to a UPS?
Depends on the UPS.
Battery, I mean, you know what I mean? Just get like a car battery and add to it, or is that how they work?
Put the UPS on a UPS.
Put the UPS on a generator. Actually, what you need is a generator.
Yeah.
You know, put it on a UPS, on a generator. It'll go to the UPS while the generator starts up. Yep. And now you've got your every internet service provider.
Yeah, it just knows when your electricity turns off, turn this on.
The generator UPS only has to stay on long enough for the generator to take over, and then the generator runs the thing until it runs out of gas, but hopefully it won't be that long.
That long, great. All right, thanks a lot, guys.
Sure.
Good luck.
Bye-bye.
All right. This is actually getting to be fairly common these days. People running security cameras in their house so you can check in on the house even when you're at work. You know, watch your babysitter. You know, see if it's the dog or the cat that's tearing up the couch.
Right.
There was a TV commercial where the dog kept getting blamed until he took a picture of the cat doing it.
Right.
The dog took a picture of the cat ripping up the couch.
That's an interesting question, and it certainly raises one of the problems that we have. At work, with professional equipment, I can set everything exactly the way I want it to be. At home, you generally either don't have that level of granularity, or you do, but you don't know what to do with it. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem that we're seeing a lot. It goes back to... It used to be all you had to know was how to get your modem to work and dial up. Then all you had to do was know how to get your Ethernet card to work and plug in.
Everything is auto-configuring for the novice users.
Right. But you don't want it auto-configured in this case because you're doing something outside the norm. So suddenly there's an awful lot of knowledge you got to have in order to make this work correctly. I had fun setting mine up. I got a nice Cisco router. Cisco bought Linksys now, and so it's a Cisco Linksys router. one of the very new ones. And I tell you, it gives me lots and lots of features, lots and lots of capability. I personally am very happy with it.
It used to be that you had to get special internet-enabled cameras or IP cameras. But now virtually every computer has a camera built into it.
Yeah.
And it can be your security camera. You don't need a special one. Although the pan, tilt, zoom features are nice.
Yes.
I had a Cisco, I think I've asked you this before. I had a Linksys wireless webcam, and I accidentally flashed it with the wrong BIOS.
Ouch.
I was going to, I had a BIOS update, and I flashed it with the compressed version, not the uncompressed version.
Ouch. Yeah, that's probably bad then.
How do I get it working again?
I have no idea.
I don't think you can. Once it's messed up,
there's
it's
supposed
messed up.
There's a supposed to be reset to factory default, but that never worked right. Mm. I think I killed it.
Yeah, that depends on the BIOS to do that.
Yeah.
And,
you are hosed. I'm afraid
I picked that wrong.
I suppose
wrong
you
file
could. I suppose you could reflash the BIOS.
It never boots up enough
by taking
to get
it
on
out
the network. Yeah,
it
in another maybe
prom burner.
Yeah,
that would have to be the way that would go.
Yep.
Yeah, I was actually I've set all. Frankly, I've set all of my routers. There was a problem with my internet service providers. DNS servers for a couple of days, and so I just set my router to go to Google. 8.8.8.8.8.4.4. I've never had a problem since.
There's a couple of websites, and Steve Gibson at GRC has a DNS benchmarking program that will benchmark all the DNSs near you. And oftentimes Google is the fastest, but a lot of people are switching to Google's DNS server, so it's getting slower. And you can find faster DNS servers. And the DNS looks up the address of the web page you're going to. So
right, when you send it google.com, that goes to a DNS server, which returns 8.8.something.something.
Right. So the faster your DNS server is, the faster your web browsing appears to be. So by switching DNS servers, most people just use the DNS server of their ISP. But you can switch to a faster DNS server.
Yeah, my I tried the ones at RIT for a while, and they're very, very fast early in the morning. And well,
kids
early in the morning
sleeping.
And late at night are the same thing for me.
Yep.
But during the day and in the evening, yeah, not so much. all right. We've had one Jeff, and everybody else has been a Steve. Here comes another Steve. This one's from Irondequoit. Welcome, Steve. What's your question?
Well, it's not necessarily a question, just a comment upon you had made mention earlier in the show about that new Google YouTube thing about the government.
Yep.
Well, I wonder if they're going to be doing a robot screening as to when you want to go and see something, whether, you know, it's like, oh, well, you've clicked on so many progressive sites, we're going to give you only the progressive views, or you clicked on so many conservative sites, we're only going to give you the conservative views.
Well, the whole point of the town hall is that you get to see both and vote for both open up and down. So at that particular site, it's very unlikely that will happen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't mean anywhere else.
I saw a YouTube video about from Eli Parisi
right.
doing a TED broadcast in February where he talked about where Google and Facebook and a number of these places kind of go through and automatically start editing out things that you might want to see, but... it's like how he explained how he had links to his conservative friends and to his liberal friends. But because he was clicking a little bit more on his liberal friends, all his conservative friends' stuff got went away.
Right, you know, right. I see what you're saying, yes. Yes, and that can certainly happen. Google does check, again, anonymously, they say, does check what you do and where you go. So if you click on a lot of car places, you see more car ads. If you click on a lot more conservative things, you'll see more conservative stuff. I get that. But theoretically, at the town hall itself, you won't get that. And I guess the deal is if you balance your, say, conservative outlook on YouTube with constantly going to liberal websites for, you know, a couple of minutes after being on that site, maybe you'll be better off that way and balance it out more. That's certainly a possibility.
But it's strange because, like, he had explained, like, he had had one of his friends.
Steve, we got to go. That music means we're done.
You
I'm
got
sorry.
The music.
Yeah, we got the music. Oh, you can't hear the music?
It.
That's all right. Thanks. Uh-huh. We got to go. Going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites on member supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 42 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Interestingly, the Recording Industry Association of America, the RIAA, God bless them, has announced that LimeWire has agreed to pay record labels $105 million to settle a lawsuit alleging that the file sharing service allowed its users to infringe copyright. Allowed its users. 13 record labels in a lawsuit filed in August 2006 alleged that LimeWire was devoted essentially to the internet piracy of music. Judge Kimba Wood of the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York ordered LimeWire to stop distributing its peer-to-peer software in October of last year. The out-of-court settlement came after a jury trial that focused on damages to be paid by LimeWire and CEO Mark Gorton began in New York last week. We are pleased to have reached a large monetary settlement following the court's finding both LimeWire and its founder, Mark Gorton, personally liable for copyright infringement, RIAA Chairman and CEO Mitch Bainwright said in a statement. As the court heard during the last 2 weeks, LimeWire wreaked enormous damage on the music community, helping contribute to thousands of lost jobs and fewer opportunities for aspiring artists. Bainwall called the settlement a reason for celebration by the entire music community. I don't even know whose voice that was. It just came out.
It sounded good.
I had to do it.
Edward R. Murrow threw a bad microphone.
No, Edward R. Murrow would be more like this. The settlement reinforces the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling against it. It was kind of like a taller, deeper-voiced Munchkin. I don't know.
It's all those newsreels from the 50s you saw. Yeah.
Flash. Mr. and Mrs. American, all ships at sea. Flash. The settlement reinforces the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling against P2P vendor Grokster in 2005, Bainwall added, but that wasn't a direct quote. The court ruled that Grokster and Streamcast Network can be held liable for copyright infringement committed by users. The settlement in the Grokster case showed that designing and operating services to profit from the theft of the world's greatest music comes with a stiff price. LimeWire.com's homepage has a note about the injunction issued by Wood. We further remind you that the unauthorized uploading and downloading of copyrighted works is illegal, the note says. Yeah, that'll work.
Uh-huh.
So if you've been using LimeWire, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, 966-5299, a toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. But for God's sake, don't call us if all you want to do is argue about how it's not stealing. It is stealing. It's a legal definition. It's theft. If you want it to not be theft, get the law changed. But until the law gets changed, it's still theft. Don't call and try to convince me that just because I leave my front door open, you can come into my house. Because you can come into my house, but I will shoot you dead and be legally exonerated for that. So I don't really want to hear about that.
This was actually a blow to the RIAA because they were asking for $75 trillion. And they only got $100 million.
The RIAA is a bunch of idiots. I'm sorry, but the I in RIAA stands for idiots.
They wanted more money than exists in the world.
Not they have no touchstone with reality at this point. Never mind. I don't want to go there. But the reality is that it is still theft. Yeah.
They multiplied the maximum damage, which is $150,000 per infringing song, by the millions of songs that are on LimeWire.
Right.
And they ended up with $75 trillion.
Right. That's cool. It's an amazing thing. $75 trillion. Here's the deal. The United States government has to sue somebody for only $14 trillion, and we've paid off the debt.
Yeah. Yeah, the U.S. GDP is $14 trillion. The entire world's gross domestic product is about $60 trillion. So LimeWire wants more money than in the entire world.
Yeah. And good luck to them on getting it.
Well, really. No, they apparently agreed that $140 million was enough.
Well, that's good for them. Our next caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dennis. What's your question?
Hi. It's not illegal. No, that's not why I'm calling you.
Yeah, I'll hang up on you right now and don't think I won't.
I'm calling you because ever since I got a Windows 7 machine, and ever since I installed Firefox 4. I think that's the latest one. It's not 5, right? It's 4?
4, yeah.
Right.
Okay. I try to do my banking, and I...
Doesn't like it.
I go back, and it keeps asking me every time for the 3 special security words, even though I say I want this computer not to do that. So what is my problem?
Go back to 3.6.
A lot of...
download Chrome.
Or Chrome. Yeah. Although I've had trouble with Chrome 11 on a few websites.
Yeah.
It's Firefox 4 is brand new, and in for a lot of websites, it's too new. And it doesn't work as well as it did with the older sites. We're actually hearing a lot of interesting analogies to Internet Explorer. Internet Explorer was big and bloated and didn't work very well, and so Mozilla made Firefox, which was lean and mean and worked really good.
Mm-hmm.
Now Firefox is getting big and bloated and doesn't work very well, and a lot of people are switching to Chrome,
which is lean and mean.
Till it goes in with more features.
We hate to be flip about this, Dennis, but the reality is, don't use Firefox for your banking.
There was a 401 update that may have fixed some of those issues, but you never know. There was actually some interesting news that came out. There's the 3.5 series of Firefox, and then the 3.6 series before they went to 4. Firefox. Is going to push the 3.6 update onto everyone that's already using 3.5. And there's been some interesting privacy and security concerns about that do we want our programs automatically updating without telling us? It'd be nice if it told us to. Mm-hmm. But then on the other side, Chrome already does that. Chrome updates itself automatically in the background and never tells you. I would appreciate if it told us. But when there's a bug fix or a patch or something broken, Chrome just pushes it out and it does it without letting you know.
Hmm.
So what version of
Chrome should I be downloading?
The latest.
Okay.
Chrome.google.com. What am I running here? I am running 11.0.696.68.
Okay, I'll sort of 11. I got it.
And Firefox 3.6, though, I'm still running that, even though they've tried to force me with 4 and 4.01. I've said no, and I mean, I do all my internet banking and everything else with Firefox, and I'm using 3.6, and it works fantastic. And you can still find 3.6.
Yeah, I did. I had 3.6, but then I was reading that Firefox 4 would be faster and better. And
I found Firefox 4 to be a lot slower than 3.6 was.
Yep.
See, I'm running Google Chrome 12, but I'm on beta.
I think 12 is the beta, yeah.
Yeah. So 11 is the new one. If you just go to google.com/Chrome, you'll get it.
Okay.
For a lot of people, it's the plugins.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yep.
If you're running a lot of Firefox add-ins, or if you're running NoScript or running AdBlock, then you've got to get equivalent plugins for Chrome, and most of them do exist for Chrome, but it's that big plugin architecture that Mozilla built up, and that's also one of the causes for Firefox slowing down.
Right,
is of all those plugins, and there was compatibility issues when Firefox 4 came out. A lot of the plugins didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Right, there are only a couple of plugins that I actually use, but I what I really like are some of the apps that are available, TweetDeck and SpringPad and NewSquares. They're all free. I personally like them a lot. They're pretty. There's a lot of neat stuff out there. Some of them are actual apps that run. Some of them are just links to the website. I work with an outside startup, and I wrote them an app for Chrome. It's really just a link to the website. It was very fast, very easy to do.
And you can get Angry Birds for Chrome.
I don't know why you would not. Why you would want a browser that doesn't have Angry Birds available?
I just installed it.
See?
Wait a minute. Time out.
Did you see the guy that did the full-size Angry Birds? Spanish City. It was a whole block long.
Yep. Did you see the guy who created an Angry Birds cake for his kid, played it before he ate it?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Dave doesn't know Angry Birds?
No.
Dave, dude!
It's a ballistic trajectory program.
You got to remember, the past month...
It's been
a challenge for me this...
It's a game. It's a game. There's free versions. There's paid versions, and it's just a game, and it's kind of taken the world by storm.
It's a ballistic trajectory program. You're shooting a bird with a slingshot to try to knock down
the
enemy pigs.
The pigs have stolen the birds' eggs, and so the birds are committing suicide to kill the pigs. It's not a story you really want to delve deeply into, okay? It's more about just shooting down the pigs than it is about killing the birds while you're doing it.
All right, because I saw another app that somebody said, and you got to download to your iTouch, which they were playing on the iPad, which is Cut the Rope.
Cut the Rope's a cute one, too.
Yeah,
there's more skill involved in that one. It's a rope swinging, and you have to cut the rope at the
right time.
At the right time to get the trajectory, which is a tough word, of the cookie.
Yeah, there's different things, depending on what level you're rolling.
So if you cut it too soon, you miss. If you cut it too late, you miss.
Yeah,
and then there's some later levels. You have to make three cuts at the same time.
And then there's the Humble Bundle. There's three of them. There's three Humble Bundles so far. And what it is, it's a whole bunch of games that are essentially free.
I've been here before because my link is purple, but I don't remember it.
Yeah, there's three of them. There's the Humble Indie Bundle, the Humble Frozen Bite Bundle, and I forget what the first one might have just been called, the Humble Bundle. And basically, you pay what you want to pay.
Okay.
And get to download all these games. The second one, the Humble Indie Bundle, had some terrific stuff that we played. My daughter and I both played.
Frozen Bundle is now closed.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're done now? Okay.
Yeah. And they made $900,000.
Yep. And every once in a while, they come out with another Humble Bundle. And basically, you pay what you want, and you decide whether who gets, you know, what money.
Okay.
And you get to download all these things. They're Mac versions, Windows versions, Linux versions, and you get to download them and play them.
The average Windows payment was $3.91.
Mm-hmm.
The average Mac payment was $6.42.
Mac people are used to overpaying.
The average Linux payment was $11.82.
Because we so rarely pay for anything, we have lots of money to be able to do that with.
See, no, well, I'm finding some like
nice.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
The different apps for my iTouch, like I I'll try it just for the hell of it and look for an app that will teach me the frets on my guitar.
Yep.
I'll give it a shot. Wham! There's one, and it's for a bass guitar fretboard. And it's like, yeah, you can sit. So I'm there on my iTouch now. I can sit, put the earbuds in, and it teaches me, by just playing that. While I'm sitting waiting, maybe in between clients, I can put on my iTouch and listen to that and practice the fretboard. It teaches me the notes on it so I can, learn it. And it's like, cool. And it was free download. I mean, I can get the other version that'll cost me $1.99.
Yep. And that's the
I was
big
looking
thing.
At a $5 program the other day, and I was fighting with myself. That's $5. I don't want to spend that much.
But it's so cool.
You got to have
$5. Like, that's a lot. I remember we used to pay, go to the store and pay $50, $60 for something, $200 for something. Yeah, it's a very different world we live in, and we're finding that a lot of people are not willing to pay. And you can call them cheap. You can call them fiscally responsible. I don't care what you call them. The fact is there are people willing to pay people who are not willing to pay. Exactly. All right, that music tells me you've wasted another 2 hours of your life listening to this show. You've just got 4 hours and 5 minutes till your local time zone reaches the rapture. So we want to thank everybody for listening in. We want to remember to call in again next week. You know the numbers. We'll be giving them back to you next week. But right now it's going to be George. George is going to play some really lovely German music, and I think you should all listen, because really, after that, you'll want to go to the rapture. So everybody wave to the camera. We're all going to wave now, and we're done for another week. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco. It's been a pleasure. We are Soundbites on the truly great member-supported Jazz 90.1. Thanks for listening.